this week on Art of the Air features guest relations and gift shop manager with Elkhart's Midwest Museum of American Art, Michelle Enfield. Next, actor Matthew Williams appearing as Seymour in the Toll Theater production of A Little Shop of Horrors, running October 24th through November 1st. Our spotlight's on the 2025 Interwoven Expressions Market at Sand Ridge Country Club on November 8th.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org. And is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. Hello, I'm Larry Breckner, board chair for Lakeshore Public Media and also a sustaining supporter. As Northwest Indiana's public broadcaster on TV, radio, and digital, we're not only bringing you the best of PBS and NPR, but more importantly, serve as a vital community resource for great local programs like Regionally Speaking, Eye in the Arts, Friends and Neighbors, Let's Eat with Chef Nick, Art in the Air, Building Blocks, and more. Please help protect my Lakeshore Public Media with your support by visiting lakeshorepublicmedia.org/give. We'd like to welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight. She represents the Interwoven Expressions exhibit and sale. That'll be on Saturday, November 8th, 9 to 4 p.m. at Sand Creek Country Club. And actually, this is our 40th season doing that. And what we have today is the chair of the whole exhibit, Lou T-Rock. And she's going to tell us all about what's going on, what to expect if you go, and seeing it. Lou, welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you. Exciting. It's exciting to be here.
Yeah, it's very nice to see you again.
So tell us what we can expect if we come to see the event. I know I popped in last year just to see what it was after our interview. But tell us what people can expect when they show up to it.
Interwoven is anything created with fiber. It's a juried show. We have artists coming from, it can be from any state that borders like Michigan. I have artists coming down from Grand Rapids, from Kalamazoo, from Three Rivers, Michigan, from Chicago, from Evanston, from Lafayette, Indiana. These are all people working with fiber. Anything that is presented at Interwoven is an original creation, and it incorporates fiber. It doesn't matter if you weave, spin, felt, dye, knit, crochet, whatever you do, this has to be done with fiber. So that's the basics. It's an incredible, exciting event. When people walk in, they see color everywhere. They are so struck with the colors in the ballroom that they will take one trip around the entire ballroom just to see what's there and get acclimated to the color. And then they start shopping.
So Lou, when you jury in your artists, is it an equal opportunity every year for every artist, or how does the jury process work?
Okay. Once you're juried in, you're in until you decide to drop out, or if you change the type of fiber work that you're doing. If you suddenly change from weaving to knitting, you need to re-jury to get in. Some years, none of the artists drop out, and so we cannot open jurying. Other years, usually two or three artists drop out. Either they've had a conflict of the dates, or they just can't make it. So every year we have two or three new artists. This year we've got an incredible person who takes denim and recycles that. And she's making new things like purses and saddlebags out of this denim that she's recycled. Another artist is doing fiber collages that are just delightful. So it can be anything from a $4 Christmas ornament to a $400 hand-woven jacket.
And so how many artists participate?
This year, there'll be 20 artists. The ballroom is only so big, and that's about all we can fit into this room.
I see you have also included, I don't know if this year or in the past, paper as a fiber art.
Yes, paper is fiber. Baskets, reed is fiber. Anything that is made with fiber. If somebody knitted a piece of jewelry with wire, they could not bring that. But if they knit it with anything made of fiber, wool, even if they were to make handmade paper ornaments, that's accepted because paper is fiber.
So do you know what your attendance is on average, what you can expect if people
Sure. Sure. We average about 400 people that will come through. We have some customers who are faithful, who come back every year. They start their holiday shopping at Interwoven. Our sales are incredible. I mean, I don't know if you want me to tell, but we will do $30,000 in 8 hours.
Wow.
In retail sales. Now, we have eliminated our long lines to check out. We now have a speedy quick check, and there is no wait time. This was one of the biggest problems that we had, and we solved that. Quick check, and you're out.
Excellent. And is there a cost to come see it?
No. Parking is free. It's at Sand Creek Country Club. It's a beautiful venue, and there is no entry fee. Sand Creek even allows the Interwoven customers to have lunch in their bar, in their grill. It's not free, of course, but, I mean, where else can you go and shop, have a nice day, and then have lunch with a glass of wine? And then if you realize you forgot something, go back and shop some more. We'd love to have you buy some more things.
How long have you been sharing this?
Oh, 30 years.
Wow. So over the 40 years, you've been in there for almost the majority of the 40 years that you've been doing this.
Right. We have a couple of people, one for sure from Chesterton, who is, she was in from the very beginning, and she's still with us. Every year, a few artists drop out, and we add a few new ones. So it's always something new. And every artist is placed in a new position in the ballroom so that the show looks new and different to returning customers.
Real quick, do you have a fiber art that you do?
Oh, I'm a weaver.
Okay.
I create garments and dish towels.
And the ultimate sponsor for this is the Duneland Weavers Guild?
The Weavers Guild, we used to be associated with the guild, but we separated from them for tax reasons. This is a freestanding organization. All the profits after expenses are paid go back to the participating artists.
Are you represented? Is your work available at the
Yes, my work will be there, and lots of other great things. Come and see us.
Excellent. Well, that's the Interwoven Expressions. It'll be on Saturday, November 8th, 9 to 4 p.m. at Sand Creek Country Club. It is free to admission, and it's a beautiful exhibit. This is its 40th year. Lou T. Rocks, the chair, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight and sharing that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Sunday is brought to you by Emberforge Consulting, thoughtful marketing and digital learning built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BREC.com.
Hi there, this is Public Radio theme composer B.J. Lederman, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Michelle Enfield to Art on the Air. Michelle is currently the guest relations and gift shop manager at the Midwest Museum of American Art in Elkhart, Indiana. Born and raised in Elkhart, she has also lived and worked in Colorado and Oregon, pursuing and enjoying several creative career paths, which included culinary as well as curating retail and gallery spaces. Upon returning to Elkhart in 2019, she built on her interest in collecting to venture into antiques and vintage sales, managing an antique shop in Goshen, Indiana. She brings the wealth of those experiences to the MMAA. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Michelle. It's terrific seeing you.
Hey, thank you. It's a really great opportunity to be here with you both.
Well, we like having our guests on the show tell us a little bit about their background story. And Michelle, we're interested in yours. So I'll put it this way. How you got from where you were to where you are now? Tell us all about Michelle.
Sure. Well, very middle-class family. My parents had me when they were both pretty young and still just figuring out their own worlds. And my dad was a photographer for several years, mainly doing wedding photography, which wasn't really thrilling for him, but he did do a lot of side photography and art photography. And my mother, very musical, and did a little bit of theater with theater groups locally. So both of them were avid readers, which I learned to read, I think, when I was probably five, just because, of course, growing up in the 70s, you know, we didn't have as much digital. So reading was a great way to go off into new worlds.
I know. And what was elementary school like? Was there an art program at that point? Or did you have interest in all the things that you're interested in now, like the vintage and art?
Sure. Well, because my parents were so young, they divorced when I was a small child. And I think mainly because of that, I was able to traverse different life changes pretty easily. I pretty much went to a different school every year from first grade until 10th grade. So I learned to adapt with people and, you know, different educational styles that from different teachers around the area. So I really didn't get super deep involved in art as a child with my school because I just moved a lot. But reading there was something that I could do very easily and enjoyed. And by the time I was, I think, in sixth grade, I had read, I was past all of the different books for, you know, that you have to, our school books for reading. So I just was able to just read whatever I wanted when I was sixth grade. You know, the teacher just said, grab a book and read. You've already done all this. But as far as a great teacher to me was my grandmother. She was, I would call her someone that could pick something up, a new hobby every few years, and it went from, you know, baking and decorating cakes to hand quilting to just anything she saw, she was into it. And she would just have this tiny little house that would be full to the brim with whatever craft she was into. She was also a huge lover of thrifting and garage sailing. So I think that's where I got that.
Now the story is coming together. Since this is radio, they can't see your face, but as you're talking about your grandmother, you're just glowing.
Oh, yeah. Grandma Betty.
So with a mother that was musical and a father that was photography, so was it musical theater or did she play an instrument?
She's very apt with the instruments. She plays piano. She can pick things up pretty easily, but I do recall her playing piano mostly and singing. She's got three sisters and they would just sing around the table all the time. And actually on my dad's side, there's also a large musical presence. All of his uncles were in bands and like session musicians for like country music. So they both really loved music, and I grew up enjoying that as well. And for a brief time, when we moved back here from Oregon in 2019, a friend of mine has a music store and a music venue, and I would help out there, which was really fun, although I spent all my money on vinyl, so I really didn't get a paycheck.
We've all had jobs like that.
Yes. Where does that? So you're going through, did high school bring you to any more like art experiences or things like that as you were doing that? And I know it seems like you went to various different places, but did you find someone that stimulated that interest?
To be honest, I was really more connected with a science teacher that I had, and he was very kind to me, because I think the moving around, I just was pretty adapting, but I kind of was more academic in high school. And then after high school, I started off dating a gentleman, and we went to Colorado, and I did a lot of retail there. And when I came back, I met a person who was a baker at a bakery here in Elkhart called the Exchange Bakery. And I really dived right into that and learned how to create your laminated pastries, homemade soups, just cooking in general. And I think that experience, and my friend who was a baker there, was very artistic. And I just started seeing how everything related in an art way, you know, by cooking, music, artwork. You know, he just lived a very bohemian art lifestyle, which I really was impressed with, and kind of felt like I was already on that same path. I moved a lot as a child. And then as an adult, in my 20s, I was definitely not ready to settle down. So I think that probably my 20s is when I really started enjoying the art as looking at it through that perspective where everything can feel like art. Anything you do, if you do it with purpose and love, can feel like art.
So did you practice any art? Did you pick up anything to do to actually do that?
I would say, for me personally, I love curating spaces. I love collage and mixed media, but I haven't really thought about it as me being an artist. I do at this point collect so much that I've kind of think that my whole space is a canvas that I just curate. So I'll collect anything that catches my eye and make it look interesting together.
Sure.
Just walk into the museum and just that first look, it's so gorgeous. And that's you.
Oh, thank you. Together.
Yeah, the parallel I would make is in theaters, being a producer. You're not actually performing, directing, or doing as much of the creative, though producing is a creative art in itself, but you're creating the environment in which a show is produced. So it's probably similar to curating.
Yeah, I would say so. I had a wonderful opportunity living here in Elkhart to work with an interior designer. And then when I moved to Oregon, I also worked for a lady who ran a gallery and was an interior designer. And I ran her shop, and I was in charge of curating the spaces. And then that also made me connect with artists in a more personal way. And of course, the customers, and just seeing these collectors find somebody and how excited they were. So I just am a big fan of connecting artists with the public.
Now, you know, some people might think of Elkhart, and of course, Elkhart is very closely related to South Bend, as, why is there really much art going on? There's kind of a tendency to think like, oh, Chicago and big cities and things like that. But actually, as I observed, is both those areas, South Bend and Elkhart, actually are pretty thriving arts communities. Can you speak to that?
Oh, definitely. When one thing about leaving Portland, Oregon was that, you know, oh, it's such an amazing mixed art community. And coming back here, I for sure wanted to be involved with the Midwest Museum of American Art, because I know that this is their 47th year with the Juried Regional. And it's now serves 24 counties of local artists in the area. And, you know, this last one, there were over 180 works of art by over 130 artists that are local to our Midwestern area. That, so yes, I think that sometimes, and I do remember cherishing this from the 90s, is you get a certain time in your life where, you know, you really have to be the investigator and find what you're looking for. And now it's kind of all there for you. But a lot of these artists, they're out there. You just need to find them. And they sometimes are shy about being on Instagram or Facebook. But luckily, you know, there's art communities around here that they are able to thrive in. And I love this Juried Regional. It's fantastic this year to see what people are producing, artists are producing.
I know that's the beauty of the Juried Regional too, is that you reach beyond Elkhart and you do then get all these, you know, just a variety of people you wouldn't normally run into. It's a beautiful show.
Yes. And, you know, working for an interior designer for a lot of years, I was just always amazed that people buy art from, you know, big box stores when there's amazing original art available all around us that is so affordable. And these artists are expressing themselves, and a lot of the art they're creating, you know, is relatable because it's from the area where you live.
And that's true.
Well, and then that brings a question to my mind. How can you connect people to that art? You know, a lot of people don't go to necessarily art galleries. What's the challenge of maybe getting people, local artists, to be seen as opposed to buying something from a big box store, you know, getting those arts in? I mean, you know, some people don't come to galleries. So is there an outreach maybe that you could work on or something?
We have had Brian Burns, we all know who he is. He is retiring this year. And so we've added some new staff in order to kind of accommodate and transition a little easier, because he is really, you know, irreplaceable.
Dynamo. But
we have a couple new younger curators. One is an art education curator. Her name is Emma Marsh. And she also is very involved in Lang Lab in South Bend. And so she's bringing a fresher approach, and we're offering classes, then more classes to come starting in spring. But every Wednesday she has a sketch club, and she did a class with children over the summer, like a summer camp. Also, social media is a great outlook, and we have Randy Roberts, who is our head curator, and he handles that very well, reaching more people than maybe would just pop in here. And I guess it is a challenge, but I feel like wherever I'm at, I'm always selling the museum in a sense that I hope people will come and feel that we are inclusive to everyone. We want everyone to be able to enjoy art and see amazing new art and some of our, you know, our main gallery art that's from our permanent collection.
Well, you mentioned Brian, who also was on our June 27th show. It was actually his second interview with us. But that brings me to the thing. What brought you to the Midwest Museum of American Art? How did you connect with that? You're there, and we want to hear about that story, how you connected with them and became part of it.
Sure. Well, for the past 30 years, have also worked literally across the street. When I've lived in Elkhart, I have had a very touching relationship with Matsky Florist, which is their neighbor, and have worked there since I was 18 years old. Whenever they need me, that flower shops get very busy with all kinds of holidays and such. So I knew Brian from just waving every day. And then my father-in-law is a member here. So when we moved back from Portland, we would come because Ray was coming and join the different events that happen here. And Brian had at one point said, hey, would you and your husband like to volunteer for certain, you know, events that are happening? And we did, and it was so much fun. So whenever I had the opportunity, I would volunteer for either, you know, bartending or just helping set chairs or the juried regional and, you know, accepting art. And then this past year, I had been working at managing an antique mall in Goshen. And I had thought I need to step back from this. And I just happened to step up at the same time that they were looking to have someone part-time here. And that has now turned into a full-time position. So I feel like it's all kismet. It was meant to be.
So tell us about your daily routine for what you're doing. Tell us what you're doing for our audience, but then tell us what your daily routine is. Maybe it isn't that daily, but just a rough idea.
Sure. Well, we're a very hands-on crew here. So this last year, a lot of things had gotten done that were maybe not what you would think a museum staff would do, which includes new flooring that the curators, all of us rolled up our sleeves, pulled out the old flooring, brought in new, prepped it for the person laying the floor. We weren't laying the actual floor. So on a day-to-day basis, when we're not open, we're still extremely busy here. So we're doing, like I'm doing right now, having conversations with people, meetings with people, speaking with artists that we hope to have in the gift shop. This last month was all about the juried regional and just getting everything dialed in for that. So, and then during Thursdays is our noontime talk at 12:15. So that's our day to really jazz it up with our members that come for that experience. So I would say it's everything. We clean, we host, we get our hands dirty and organize everything that maybe you wouldn't think a museum is doing, but all of the staff comes together for that.
I have to say the museum, the flooring is fantastic. And on opening night, I just kept hearing, you know, people were like, there's something different here. It's brighter. It looks wonderful. So it's
amazing how much it just elevates the artwork, I think, and more to come next year. We're not stopping, you know, expect more changes. And outside too, we had some high res digital images created for these windows that are boarded up because this was a bank. And so what it looks like now is images from our permanent collection that are on the outside of the building that let people know that this is an art museum, not just an old bank building. And that has been very, very positively enjoyed by passerbys and people stopping in from out of town, and of course our members.
So in the post-Brian era, which is coming up at the end of this year, tell us a little about what the plans are for the change. I mean, he's been such an integral part of that for almost the whole history of the museum. But, you know, you touched on a little bit about how there's going to be multiple curators, but just tell us a little bit about the post-Brian era.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think we all know that Brian will probably never be completely gone from the museum. In fact, we have created a little office space upstairs so he can come and at his leisure when he needs to have conversations. He is such a wealth of knowledge, and we have added the new staff. And as of right now, on December 31st, when Brian leaves, and we are going to, of course, be honoring him in December on the 13th for our members to celebrate. So mainly right now, we have a co-director who has stepped up and been fabulous at handling the transition, and her name is Jennifer Burns, and she... I believe that what's going to happen is eventually we'll have a director that will be a full-time director, but we're taking our time to find the right person, because like we all know, Brian has big shoes to fill, and Jennifer is doing a fantastic job, and I just can't wait to go forward. And we know that Brian will not be gone. He's just going to be able to take some more vacations, I think.
And I know one of the things he wants to do, because he's talked about with us, is maybe doing a podcast to relate his knowledge. Well, we're in our final minute here. We want to give you a chance to talk about, you know, what exhibit is currently running, which you have, Michelle, a little bit, but what's maybe coming up in November and even to early next year.
Sure. So as of right now, the exhibit that the juried regional is until the 31st. And then of course we still have our permanent in our main gallery, our permanent collection. We will be closed in January this year. And then we'll still to be determined what our new exhibits are going to be, because we have new curating staff and they're all working together with our director, Jennifer, to see what is going to work. We're in some projects. I think we're going to do a little refresh, possibly with the Norman Rockwell as well.
Excellent. Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air and sharing your journey to there. And it's Michelle Enfield. And you can find her at the American Museum of Art in Elkhart. And the current show running there, of course, is the famous jury show running through December 31st. Thank you so much for coming on Art of the Air.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, Michelle. Thank you so much.
Art in the Air listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
Hi, this is Morgan McCabe, freelance theater professional and writer for the Northwest Indiana Times. You are listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM. Thanks for listening.
We would like to welcome Matthew Williams to Art on the Air. Matthew is a recent graduate from the University of Kentucky in chemical engineering. He moved to Chicago in May and has had several acting roles. He will be performing in Little Shop of Horrors at the Toll Theater as Seymour. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Matthew. Very nice meeting you.
Nice to meet you all. Thank you.
Well, Matthew, you always start to start out our interviews. We want to know the background of our guests, and so our audience does too. And I always tee it up by saying, how you got from where you were to where you are now? So tell us all about Matthew.
Yeah, great. So I'm Matthew Williams. I'm from Berea, Kentucky, originally, which is a very nice small town in Kentucky, sort of close to Lexington, if you're wanting to figure out the geography. And I got to say, my folks have always been pushing me, you know, to go for any of these opportunities that I've wanted. So as I was just mentioned, I am the first in my family to attend college and graduate with a college degree. So I was always very proud of that. But once I got done with that degree and started working as an engineer, something that always came to mind to me was, you know, I want to be performing again, because all through high school, It actually happenstance. I picked up theater one day. We had to take an elective for our extracurricular classes at high school. We had to do at least one. So I signed up for intro to theater, competing against choir and band. And it just sort of took off from there. I loved that class. I have to thank, of course, my director and all of the phenomenal folks that I got to work with through there. Took a break during college, but the theater bug never left. So I ended up getting done with my degree, moved from my first job, and found a couple of community theaters in the area of Murray, Kentucky. So out west, I don't know if they happened to hear it. Shout out to Playhouse in the Park and the Purchase Players for helping me along the way and getting me back into it. Because once I got to that point, I wanted to find more opportunities. So I wanted to keep going and keep cutting my teeth with more casts across the country. So that led to, along with looking for a way out of Kentucky, somewhere a little more exciting. Hey, I love Kentucky. I do.
I know Kentucky's gorgeous.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. But, you know, not very much there in terms of opportunity. And I love Murray, Kentucky, but it's just about the edge of civilization, save for the university. So I was definitely ready to get somewhere a little bigger. And Chicago, when me and my girlfriend were talking, we moved up here together back in May. But we were one to look for somewhere that had opportunities for both of us. And Chicago always stuck out. So I do still work as an engineer up this way during the day. But in the evenings, I've managed to keep working with other casts. And that includes Toll Theater, which I'm with now. Mm-hmm. For this production of Little Shop of Horrors.
Well, Matthew, don't you think chemical engineering and Little Shop of Horrors are really compatible?
Yeah, actually, that's fun. I do kind of think about that from time to time. Because once, I can't remember who I was talking to, but someone had brought up the compatibility of engineering with theater, and I hadn't really thought about it to that point, but they're both very creative outlets, you know, a lot of problem solving that goes into it, albeit maybe something that people don't usually think about. But, you know, when I'm on stage and I'm having to improv in the moment, or I'm having to pick up where somebody left off, or just, I guess, just turning it into, in my mind, a process of, okay, I do this scene, then this scene. Then. There's a lot of thinking to theater that maybe people don't naturally come to their own conclusion about. So
completely. So I'm still interested, very interested in childhood. So your family, were they musicians? Were they singers? I mean, you said they were very supportive. But is there like a familial art background or?
Well, you know, I don't think any of the people in my family would call themselves singers or musicians, certainly not, you know, and I don't think they'd be mad at me for saying that. But I wouldn't even say art was in the house very much. It was just, I think when I was a kid, I naturally was drawn towards music. So I always enjoyed, you know, my father played trombone once upon a time. My aunt played the flute. My uncle played the trumpet. You know, so you had a lot of these musical elements, I think, throughout my life. And even though they wanted me to go to college and go and get that degree and do these things that I wanted to be able to do, I think they've always been supportive of that, which I'm very grateful for, because they didn't have to be, you know, they didn't have to be so naturally accepting towards it. But I think as long as it made me happy and I was pursuing what I needed to pursue, that was good for them. But as far as experience with music and things like that, no, there isn't a ton of singing or anything in the family. In fact, I feel comfortable saying that I'm maybe the first that really went down an arts related path with my interests.
Now, excellent.
Now you started really doing theater in high school. Did I catch that? And if so, did you have any, like some of your early productions that have an impact on you? Like for me, it was Carousel. That was the very first major show I worked on, and that was it. So was there a show that was like, wow, this is really something? You know, whether it be acting or something. So tell us about that experience.
I will. Yeah. Well, first, I guess just talking about technically, I made my stage debut with How the Grinch Stole Christmas in third grade. So, you know, if you want to get really down to the nitty gritty, but yeah, I guess just talking about childhood real quick and then segueing into what you just asked. You know, I was involved with choir in elementary school and involved with, like I just said, some of those smaller productions. So I guess there were some early childhood theater slash acting slash singing roles that I'd taken on. But speaking to high school and where it really stuck, like I really felt like I was where I needed to be. My first show I ever did, so this is back in the Intro to Theater days, was by Don Zelaitis. It was the superhero Ultraferno, which for those unfamiliar, sort of a spoof on the whole superhero genre. Very fun show. But I think from there it just took off. I must have made an impression on my director, which again, I'm very thankful for Susan Rebecca Cates, who was my high school theater director. If she happens to stumble upon this recording, hi. but really the show that I think stuck it. So that was a lot of fun getting to be in Superhero Ultraferno. Adam's Family, which all kinds of folks are familiar with. I was an ancestor in that, but I think that's the first time that I really felt the magic of it. That's where I felt like me on stage was that show and working alongside some people who've been doing it for years longer than I have. You know, I always love every show that I do. I feel like someone teaches me something, right? Whether it's somebody I'm acting alongside, a director I'm with, the people backstage.
I think it's like a family. Story. So you get all these different families.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I have nothing but high remarks to say for the people I did high school with did theater with in high school, because they meant everything to me and they still do today. I still keep in touch with them. So,
chemical engineering and acting, is there a point at which you think that maybe acting could be a career? I mean, you know, I'm sure any engineering job is a fairly decent paying job, even an entry level, but is there a point in which you went, gee, you know, maybe I can make it? And if so, I mean, Chicago is a great market because Chicago is a major theater city, but is there some thought in your mind saying, maybe this could be a career?
Talking to engineering, like you just said, I'm working alongside, and I'm very grateful for the opportunities that I've gotten to have through that and the people I've gotten to meet. But like you're saying, you know, as much as I enjoy engineering, there's nowhere that I feel like myself more, I think, than being on stage or being in environments like this. So to answer your question, if tomorrow, right, I could have everything that I needed to be able to do theater as a career, or even just acting in general, anything adjacent to theater. Yeah, I could absolutely see myself doing that. But, you know, I'm not trying to rush myself or get too far into things. I know there's still a lot of growth that I have to do as a performer before I get to that point. But I would absolutely love to get to do this as a more full-time permanent.
Well, and in theater, you now have to be kind of a triple threat. You don't have to do all three, but you have to sing, dance, act anymore. That wasn't always the case. But you have to bring all three. Now, I was curious about your girlfriend because you moved up here to Chicago. Is she involved in theater and performance? Or
so we met. I did Putnam County Spelling Bee about a year ago now. About a year ago. I was Panch, for those who are curious. That was a very fun role. I loved getting to just have fun on stage with the contestants and everything. But she was the stage manager.
Okay.
And we got kind of close throughout the performance, sort of like you alluded to it being a very familial thing. That was a very close group, and I'm also grateful for those folks. But me and her continued talking throughout the show, and it just sort of naturally happened where, so to answer your question, she is not as active in theater as me, but she does have the little theater itch in her. So hopefully she'll be back involved sometime. I keep trying to get her to, but you know.
Would she, I mean, you said she's playing the role of stage manager, but is she's looking in performance and doing that?
So I have seen a picture of her in Clue as the butler. Yes. So I really do hope I get to see her on stage again sometime. But I, throughout my knowing her, yeah, I've only known her as backstage or working backstage. But again, yeah, if you know any productions of Clue in the area, I know someone who could reprise.
Oh, there you go.
Yes. Feel free to reach out to me.
So, should have tried out for Audrey, huh?
Yeah.
What the heck happened there? Yeah, she knew I was good. No.
Well, that brings me to how you connected with the Toll Theater here in Northwest Indiana.
Yes. So I am active on a couple of websites in terms of looking for auditions in the area. I had just wrapped up, or I was about to wrap up, pardon, the Drowsy Chaperone of Rich Schomburg Summer Theater. So that was my last role prior to this. I got to play Underling. Very fun show. Another great group, and my first taste of Chicago theater and the pace of it and how it differed from Kentucky. So come time to audition for Little Shop of Horrors, I had been active on theater in Chicago, on League of Chicago Theaters, just looking for some audition postings, and I'd seen Toll Theater. Okay, so I go and I do my initial audition, and then I'm grateful that they asked me to come back for callbacks. And I think as soon as I met Dion, who is the director of the show, and the rest of the team that was going to be involved, you could just tell that it was going to be a fun process, and it was going to be a director who was going to push me past maybe even what I thought the character was going to be when I had my first impressions of it, which I love. Someone who will show me things that I hadn't even thought about before when I'm going into a role, because I maybe even had this idea of what Seymour was going to be before I even started the process with him. And ever since then, I've really tried to lean into the camp more, because we want the show to be fun, right? It's not necessarily supposed to be a truly terrifying show. It's supposed to be a fun show. You're supposed to come and have a good time. And that's, I think, as an actor, something that I've had to do the most work on in this process so far, is leaning more into that rather than the more realistic side.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM on WVLP 103.1 FM.
What type of research have you done? Have you looked at all sorts of different plays and movies on Little Shop of Horror?
Yes. So, of course, the classic film, Little Shop of Horrors, that was, which I hadn't actually watched that. Yes. Rick Moranis. Yeah, that was great. I think if you're wanting to, maybe people who are familiar with the show, I am doing the original cast album voice. So the sort of New York-y and, pseudo that kind of area is where I'm wanting to place the accent. So I have been working on that, because I naturally do not sound like that. So that's certainly been maybe one of the bigger challenges in preparation for this role, is just getting used to talking like that rather than maybe the slower diction that I usually do. But yes, I've most certainly been watching these other takes on the character, I guess, and then sort of building mine out from there. I don't think I'm channeling a specific one. I just think they've helped me sort of mold mine.
Right, and develop pace as well. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the Little Shop, the motion picture you referred to, the big motion picture, is actually a small black and white version, was the original. There was no music. And that formulated that. And it was I think it was shot on Kinescope, but it's getting older. But anyway, so you can still see the original Little Shop of Horrors. And of course, one thing that's different from the motion picture and the version you're doing is the ending, but we won't give that away, will we?
No, yes. I highly encourage everybody to come and see the ending of this show. Maybe watch, like you're saying, see the original, and then maybe come and see what's different in this one, because it's a very fun show.
So working with the other cast members, you're in rehearsal now, correct? Or you've started rehearsal? So how's that process? How's the connection going? How are you with your Audrey and everything like that? Because there has to be sort of that awkward chemistry with her.
Yes. Yeah. So just talking about the process, we started back in September, and we have about 17 days until we open. So it's certainly the fastest process that I've ever had. But I don't say that as a bad thing. In fact, I think I love how much quicker the pace has been compared to my usual processes. I like how focused it is and how everyone has, seemingly speaking to the cast, come in prepared. You know, they were thinking about it. Sure, we got cast earlier than we started rehearsing, but people were already working on stuff. Right. Well before we came in. So that first music rehearsal, just hearing everyone together, that was amazing. It's one thing hearing it on a cast album and another thing bringing it to life with another group. So as far as the cast goes, I have nothing but high remarks. Talking about Amanda first, who is going to be playing our Audrey. She is, I can't wait for people to hear her sing. Especially, right. She's just got such a phenomenal voice, and I think she does so much justice to the character. Actually, today we'll be working a lot of our scenes together. So as far as actors go, I think me and her have gelled well. So that awkward chemistry that you're talking about, you know, we've had conversations about that, and we've been talking about that process. You know, what does it look like here? Yeah, nothing but great things to say about Amanda. But I do have to talk about our Audrey, too, as well, Gabe. Oh, man, that voice. Just as soon as – it's funny. You didn't really hear him singing until it was time for him to sing Audrey 2 songs.
Right.
And as soon as the beat comes in, you know, it's just – that voice booms and just sticks with you. So, yeah, Gabe, phenomenal actor. And then our doo-wops, who we have three, I gotta say, hardest roles in the show. You know, some of the dances that they've got going on, those harmonies, but they bring them to life like no other. And that's not even talking about the other half of Audrey 2, our puppeteer, who has been working hard on making sure that everything with the puppets is going well and all the movements are timing up. Sean, who plays Oren, the dentist, and several other roles throughout the show, just bringing all of those characters to life. It's not one, right? You have to have different accents, right. Different styles, sure. For all of them. So, yeah, just a great group. I have only high things to say about them. TJ Bird, Mushnick, me and him have a great dance number together. And I'm not known to be the best dancer, but, you know, I'm putting it together. I'm getting there.
Well, and Seymour could probably get away with not being a good dancer because the way the character is kind of awkward and a little stilted. You could probably, as far as your character, be that way. Tell us about a typical rehearsal. I mean, you know, you said the rehearsal process is longer, and that's true of when you're starting to move into pro and semi-pro theater. But give us a typical rehearsal day.
Typical rehearsal day. So we go in there. We really hit music first, so we got all that squared away. And then blocking, you know, we hit blocking. So we'll hit a scene one time and then we'll start working through it, right? Stumbling through. And Dion, great director, he pushes us, right? Sure, we're getting these movements down and he understands that aspect of it. But he really urges you in a moment to say, okay, how is my character doing this movement? What's the purpose, right? How do I put motivation behind that? So we're already building that. Even this early into the process, making sure our movements have purpose and our characters are really showing in that. And then once we get that done a few times, we'll go through, do one nice big run through where everyone's got all their blocking and everything, see how it looks, notes, move on. Right. So actually this week we have our very first run through act one, hopefully completely all the way through. No stops or anything. So ask me here in a few days.
I know, because you, Matthew, have to integrate with Seymour, you know?
Yes. So. Yeah. Yeah.
And your character, for the most part, not continuously on stage, but you're on stage probably as much as anything other than Audrey, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is going to be one of my most rewarding roles, I think, in terms of the challenge and taking that on. It's going to be one of the first shows. I've had lead roles before, but this is my first one, I think, that's really going to push me as an actor, which I love. You know, if I'm not learning, I don't want to be doing it.
Right.
So Matthew, do you have something else lined up next? Auditions or something?
So Toll Theater is doing White Christmas in December, and I'll be a member of that cast as well. I'll be playing Sheldrake, for people familiar with the show. And after that, I'm kind of just looking at how to fill that first slot at the start of the year. So,
you know, we're probably just about in our final minute here. I'll give you a chance to tell us a little bit about how they can get tickets, where they can see the show. I mean, people are familiar in Northwest Sedona with the Toll, but anyway, tell us a little bit about the show.
Yes, Toll Theater, that's T-O-W-L-E, Theater in Hammond, Indiana. If you go to their website, they'll have a buy ticket link for Little Shop of Horrors. You've got two weekends to choose from. You've got October 24th, 25th, and 31st at 7:30 p.m. And you've got October 26th and November 1st at 2 p.m. for matinees. That's all the shows that they have right now, but don't bank on it. We have kind of considered the option of using some other slots too, I think, with how tickets are selling. So if you want them, you got to go get them.
Right. Because it's a small theater. It's very intimate. You're very close in and there's a toll. Matthew, thank you so much for coming on the show. That's Matthew Williams. He'll be playing Seymour in Little Shop of Horrors. Again, it's at tolltheater.org. You can find it. You can call their box office October 24th through November 1st. It's a wonderful show with music and lyrics by Ashman and Menken, known for Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid and a whole bunch of them. Matthew, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air and sharing your arts and music and theater journey.
Yeah, thank you all for your time, and thank you to everyone who's listening. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP, 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Dee Dotson, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Media, and to Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Ember Forge Consulting, Thoughtful Marketing and Digital Learning, built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at AOTA@breck.com. That's AOTA@breck.com. BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know. Esther and Larry are on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Are on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.